Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch."
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply.
Doesn't sound like the usual mindless, boring, getting to know you chit-chat. This sounds like you actually have something to say.
Well,
why are we having these conversations?
You lose the whole
vibe, but we're back.
There was that really funny Peter Kay bit where he had an act out of like a school disco DJ, and then he goes to not talk off the mic and he just talks like this.
I think that was in his stand up as well.
Yeah, he did
the advert for it, didn't
yeah,
he?
It's so funny.
Yeah, she talks like that.
What's all that about?
He's quite, how good is Peter Kay though?
Like, everybody had that DVD.
All right, because there was two, wasn't it? It was the one
Live at the Bolton Albert Halls.
But there was one before that, wasn't it? Because it was Top of the Tower or something in Blackpool.
Yeah, it's the same show.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, because the Top of the Tower is the one where it was like he did the bit with when he went to see the Four Tops, the Motown singers.
Oh yeah, yeah, but there's like loads of the same bits. Like there's overlap. Yeah. He knows how to make money.
I always remember that bit because it's that laugh of recognition I used to love. And that was that thing of, oh, this is brilliant when he done the when you go on holiday and you're trying to use up the film on your camera. And it's a photo of your dog in front of the gas fire. Yeah.
He's so the good. Best man.
Oh, have you seen him live?
So good. No, I've never seen him live actually. Do you know when he does tours, he gets the a cut of the car park money as well.
Really?
At arenas. Because he says they wouldn't be parking there if I wasn't doing my show.
The greed in it.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, he's ruthless.
He loves it, man.
Jesus. Are you like a fan of like people like Peter Kay?
I grew up like Peter Kay was the DVD we had in our house. Me and my friends used to do garlic bread all the fucking time.
It's so nice to talk to another comedian who says that.
Well, everyone pretends they're like Bill Hicks and fucking George Carlin. As if when you were 15, you were like, yeah, I love the fucking American stand. No, I watched like Peter Kay. I watched some Billy Connolly, Lee Evans.
It's like you want to give the intelligent answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like if someone says, who's your favorite band? You're like, I want to say Kings of Leon, but everyone likes them.
Yeah, yeah. I like stuff that's popular.
Do you
know what I mean? And that's okay.
Yeah.
I remember a producer, they were being nice to me after a show. They were like, oh, that was great. Like, it's really like mainstream funny. And I took it real bad. I was like, what do you mean mainstream? I thought I was cool and artsy.
Is that what you're like? Was that old you though? Or do you still sort of feel
that
like
was that a month ago?
I was gonna say. That's why I'm shocked about you sitting here saying you like Peter Kay's though, because I thought,
oh yeah, man. I think you can bullshit all you want, but those guys are very good at what they do.
But is that, do you reckon it's changed now? Now you're into comedy, and now you're, because you seem like you're quite. You wouldn't like. What was I gonna say? You're sort of. You're an intelligent guy, aren't you? You are though. You're well, compared to me, fucking Aristotle.
No, I was like quite academic in school and stuff, and I used to be a classical musician.
Fucking hell, mate.
That was my job.
Never met one of them until now.
We're more scared of you than you are of us, don't we?
Fucking hell, mate. That is a classical musician.
Yeah, like the.
It was drums, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I have played at the Albert Hall on the Triangle.
Have you?
Yeah, I was sick at the Triangle, man.
Oh, I think everyone is that, man.
No, this is my problem. I have a fucking degree in the thing.
Degree in the Triangle.
Not like Triangle, amongst other things. But I did do exams where you had to play the Triangle.
I've got a degree in children's toys. I'm sick of the Jack in the Box, man.
Yeah, it was from Prince Andrew's University.
But so, what, so classical music, that is just, isn't that classical music is... You've got a drum, and then every now and then you go, boom.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. That is a lot of it. And I like, I'm trying to put a bit in my new show. There's a symphony called Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, and there's one cymbal crash in the whole symphony. And that, there's a guy on stage who just sits there the whole time, gets up, and then just like, and then sits down. And there's like a running joke in classical music where like most people get paid like roughly the same. So like I'm getting paid the same as like a violinist.
Yeah.
But they're there going 50p.
Yeah.
60p. Yeah. 70p. 80p. And I walk up and go, 300 quid.
So you get the same amount as well.
Yeah.
Fuck, you know, man.
It's just as amazing. It has to be there.
You are a clever guy. Yeah. Loophole.
Yeah, man. It's fun. But I liked it. But I don't know if I'm smart. I don't like I think if you see a comedian and your resounding thought is they're very smart.
Yeah.
I think that's because the comedian like wants you to know that they're smart.
I agree. Because I don't like that.
No, that's why I love like Bob Mortimer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's happy to be like the stupidest guy in the room, even though he used to be like a solicitor.
Yeah.
He's like a very clever guy. And you know that. Like you know he's clever to play. It takes a very clever man to play a fool.
Yeah, because I always think like what the thing with comedy is, or it's I like knee jerk laughter.
Yeah,
just let instinct. Ah, that's funny. You ain't got. I don't like. I don't really like going. And later on, going very clever, very
that's
clever.
Right, just
yeah, because I don't. That's not to me. To me, comedy is sitting in a pub, making each other laugh.
Yeah,
and that's, I think that's where I learned a lot of comedy is that thing of like being around a table, and you know someone comes up with a premise.
And then everybody tags it.
Yeah.
Tag. Those are the best bits where essentially you come up with a premise and then it's as if you are the whole table.
Yeah.
And that's all the tags. You just attack it from all these different angles and like, but those are the best, like most filled out like bits of stand up.
Because the thing is, I think doing that, writing that way is easier said than done, isn't it? Because you've got to get in that mood.
Yeah. Where you're it's hard to get when you're just by yourself at a desk.
Yeah.
But that's why I do a lot of writing on stage, because then you get the fear.
Yeah.
Of like, if one of the lines doesn't work, then your brain panics and it like gives me another line that might work.
Yeah. Because I'm still at that phase now where, do you ever do that thing where you'll say something quickly that comes to your head, everyone laughs and you go, that wasn't even funny.
Yeah.
And you're so disappointed in yourself.
But the audience, like, they just love feeling like you're actually in the moment. Like, we were talking about, like, there's been a lot of people around the circuit recently running their sets for Live at the Apollo.
Right.
Like, in small comedy clubs around, just to drill the 20 minutes that they need to do.
Yeah.
And it's a really weird thing to watch, because when they're practicing it, all they're trying to do is get the words out in the right order.
Yeah.
So they, even though you've seen them be brilliant before when they're dipping into the crowd, they're riffing on this, they're like bringing these ideas together and all this stuff. When they're practicing this 20 minutes, they kind of like glaze over and just do the thing.
Isn't that part of the craft and the skill though, is to make it sound like you're saying it for the first time?
Yeah, but I think there's such a pressure on Live at the Apollo to like fucking nail it.
Yeah.
like if you fumble your words or whatever, like you gotta just fucking nail it on Live at the Apollo. So people get so worked up about that. But then, and that's the problem with TV stuff, is they want to check the script of what you're gonna say, so it's like passes all their like clearance on their like lawyers and stuff. So if you like riff something on the night, it might not pass.
Did I tell you not to then? Is that what I do? Or?
Well, I've heard that what you're told is like just pretend you're crushing it.
Yeah.
So say the joke and then just like pace along the stage, like smiling, even if,
even
like,
if it hasn't worked. Laughs.
There's stories of people like tanking Live at the Apollo, like half the audience walks out. But if you watch the record, they're like crushing it because they just put the laughs in and stuff.
That's a skill, but I don't know if it's one you want to get good at.
No.
Pretending that you're doing well. When you actually, oh, that's awful, isn't it? Oh,
yeah, God. It's rough. But you see, like, even some, like, American comedians come over. Americans are so fucking, like, they've got so much, like, showbiz and, like, polish that, like, they'll do a set and, like, they just act like they're famous and class.
Yeah.
And the audience, like, kind of buys it just because they're so, like, they're so convincing.
Yeah.
But there's, like, nothing there.
Do you never have this thing with, like, Americans? I think this, when you hear, like, an American voice on the tube or something. You're like, because you recognize it from films.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
They're special people. Yeah.
It's like from the films. They might talk a bit loud. Hey, man, how are you? Like, it's like, whoa. Like.
But that's me with, and I was going to say this about the, do you not find, I find that a big difference between like Irish audiences in like Belfast where I grew up versus like London audiences is London audiences want to be like, oh, that was so clever. Whereas Irish audiences want just that knee jerk thing that you were talking about.
I've never been to Ireland, so I don't know. But I don't know if it's a London thing or, I don't know, but I think it's that thing of, they just want to go away afterwards and say, yeah, I understood that. I get that. So you get that pat on the back, because like, obviously everyone loves Stuart Lee. I watch it and go, I don't know. I don't know what he means. It's not, I'm not criticizing him, but I just, I
well,
don't,
it's not for you, and that's fine.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Like, I want to laugh. I want to be in with the cool kids, but I don't get it. And then Peter Kay comes up.
I hate all that fucking, oh, you just don't get it. I remember when I started doing comedy, I used to just start about like running nights at my uni. Like I started emceeing a Freshers Week comedy night. That was my first ever gig.
Yeah.
Which is not a good way to start. But there was, and then I did one outside of Freshers Week, and there was this comedian, and I would just book them from like the local open mics, and comedians would like recommend them to me, and I would just be like, whatever. And I, in hindsight, gave a lot of comedians their first ever paid gigs.
Because
I would go, well, like 20 quid, but like I would go to an open mic and be like, hey, do you want to come do 10 minutes at my uni? Yeah. And in hindsight, they were probably like, yo, this is going to be sick. But I give them like 20 quid, and I like, there's some people who are like, that was my first ever paid gig.
Oh, really?
But they were up, and one of them had like a really bad set, and somebody started like heckling, but in this really weird, like, because I went to like an arts, like a music college, like very fucking middle class and wanky. But they were like heckling, they were like, tell us a joke and all this, like ridiculous. But like, and I was like, man, stop it. Like, he's just trying to do a set, like, let him just get on with it. And he was like, no, have you seen Stuart Lee? Like, it's like that. I was like, you're not Stuart Lee, you're a fucking heckler at a student comedy night.
Yeah.
It was so dumb. Do you ever get those comedians whose audiences you hate more than you hate them? Like, I like Stuart Lee, but his audience pisses me off.
Yeah, because it's that thing of, that's exactly what I mean. It's that thing of, I get this, so therefore, it's like, oh, shut up. do you know what I mean? And also, there's that thing of, obviously, everyone's got their own way of doing comedy and that sort of, but you know, like when someone you're at, like when you start, you're at like a really shitty open mic or something like that, and you're in a like a basement of a pub with four people in it, someone's really trying to give you their political insight, and you're not going to change the world.
Yeah, what are you doing, man?
It gets a bit like that, doesn't it? You're doing, fucking hell, man, just try and make people laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really annoying.
I think there's that thing. Do you agree with this thing, right? When like your intentions as a comedian, right? For me personally, it's 100%. I want to make you laugh.
Yeah,
that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah,
I'm trying to really make you laugh, so it, like, you have to hold your stomach.
Yeah.
That's it. Doesn't always work.
No. But that's
But then there's so many ways. Like 50% that, 50%. I want you to know how clever I am.
No, yeah, that's really fucking annoying. Yeah. I think there's benefit in presenting interesting ideas in as funny as possible away.
Yeah.
Like, I did a fucking, like, I'm, a lot of people would think that I'm the making you think how smart I am or whatever. Like, I did, like, a good Fringe show. Yeah. And the Edinburgh Fringe has that reputation of, like, it's all fucking wanky and sad comedy and all this stuff. And there was, like, a more serious bit in the middle of my show. And there's more interesting ideas.
But you have to do that for the texture of it, though, and all that sort of shit.
Well, I think over the course of an hour, like, a like structure and a story and, like, a theme helps it feel like it's driving towards something. Because if it's just bits, 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 I think an audience kind of just loses focus or something. But again, like, there's nothing in that Fringe show barring, like, a few connective bits that I haven't.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Worked on in comedy clubs, and I don't understand how people write stuff, because where do you practice it?
Yeah,
because I'm gigging every night of the week in comedy clubs to, like, random cunts who don't have any idea who I am.
Yeah,
so how am I write all my bits and try them there, and if they don't work there, I stop doing them.
But that's how I do it. I do this. I'm getting better at this, right? You know, sometimes, you know, when you practice your bits but just in a public place, like in a pub and all that. Yeah. I'm getting better at disguising that I'm doing it now.
It's hard, because people start to catch you out.
And
people hate that.
Oh, I hate when the people do it to me.
It
happens in groups. People start saying, "So I was watching this thing last night." Don't do that to me. I know what you're doing. Don't do it, because I'm not going to laugh. You know what I mean? But there are ways of you getting it in, like getting it in.
I'm bad for it. Alfie Brown got so annoyed at me during the Fringe. We would, like, drink together, like, most days, and I'm constantly going, like, "Oh, I've had this idea for a bit." And he's like, "Can we just not today?"
As soon as you say that, I'm not going to laugh.
No.
Yeah, because I know what you're doing now.
So. The expectation is too much. And it's
the same thing as when someone goes, "Oh, yeah, look at this video."
And they're staring at you. And they're like, laugh.
I don't like it. But also, I've done it before. I think everyone knows it's a common thing, but when you show someone, watch this film, it's funny, and you've got to sit there with them when they're not laughing.
You can't. You have to just go, watch this when I'm not here.
Because
then I think you'll like it. Do you ever get annoyed when people say that to you? What? If someone goes, like, "Oh, watch this film, you'll love it." I go, like, "You don't fucking know me."
"That's what you think of me."
This
pile of shit. someone will go, "You remind me of my friend." And then you meet their friend and they're a cunt.
They're just standing too close to you, like, breathing heavy.
I remind you of him. Fucking hate that guy. Fuck's sake. That's what you think. That's happened to me a lot.
Oh, my God.
You'd love my friend.
Yeah. You know what I actually like, though, is when people go, you'd fucking hate this. See, if someone tells me I'll hate it, I'll watch it. Every time I watch it.
My brother, I was saying, we were watching on day, Room 101. I was like, what a great concept for a program. Just people moaning about shit.
I'm
like, oh, this is good. I like that. I get right into it.
It's proper. What's in your Room 101? What is it? You get one thing. What's one thing you're, like, ridden the world of?
I was trying to talk about it last night. It's really hard, because a lot of mine, because people bring up things, and they things annoy me. Mine is always, like, people. What people?
Ethnicities.
Sexuality. There's the Holy Trinity, I call it. there's a couple of things that really annoy me. One is when you're driving, and say, like, you edge out, or you do something a little bit wrong, nothing going to cause a crash, and it's always, like, a person who gives you the disapproving shake of the head.
Oh.
And it's like, because it makes me so angry, right? Because it's this thing of, like, they're looking at you going, "Oh, I've never made a mistake."
I get that.
It's so minor. So it's like, oh, that makes me angry.
Well, I said during that, anytime my dad's driving and he, like, gets annoyed at somebody for doing something, I'm like, "Have you never done that?"
Yeah.
And he goes, "What?" I go, "I've been in the car when you've done that."
Yeah, exactly.
So
fucking
chill out, okay?
But it's more the patronizing.
But we're also unaware. Anytime I'm walking and I'm in a rush in London, and anyone's walking slowly, I'm like, "These fucking idiots need to get out of my fucking way." But if I'm not in a rush and someone, like, speeds past me and bumps my elbow, I'm like, "You fucking rude bastard. Just leave the house early, or you freak."
But I fucking love moaning, don't you, though?
It's great.
I fucking love it. My brother can't have a good one. you can see him getting angry. He's doing it when someone goes up to a till and you're in the queue and they tell them how much it is. Then they get their purse out or whatever. You're in the queue.
When they get to the oyster thing.
Yeah, you could. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they start looking in their bag for the oyster card. I'm like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen? Yeah. What do you think these gates are? Fuck me.
But you need these people. You need these people to get annoyed at because it makes you feel better. You need to get annoyed.
Oh, yeah. It's good. Like,
go in. It's good to get annoyed. You can't everyone's walk around all pleasant.
No, but then sometimes I think maybe I should just be like a zen.
Yeah.
Just constantly just float above it all.
But then,
I'd love to be one of those
how,
guys.
How annoying are them people when you're pissed off, though?
Yeah.
And someone's like,
just rise above.
Fuck you! Headbutt. Cunt! Stick that in your dream catcher, like, you cunt.
Have you seen the first episode of Black Books?
No.
Oh, you haven't? Have you seen any Black Books?
I've never seen it.
Mate, so you know Dylan Moran and Bill Bailey, and it's like in a bookshop. And Bill Bailey is in this like really stressful job, and he's got this little book of calm. It's like meditative phrases to like look for. And then he like drops it in a soup at one point, like accidentally. And then it's in a cup and he accidentally like swallows the little book of calm and it like becomes part of his system. And he's just walking around like glowing, like telling everyone. There's like a dog barking and he's just like, listen, I understand that you're feeling stressed.
Them people stress me out. I don't need them people in my life. Here's the thing. I think there's a thing as well with like being online, like loads of online. You get these gurus and these teachers and that. You don't want that as a guru. You don't want someone who's got life sussed. I think you want someone who fucks up all the time.
But you not want someone who used to fuck up all the time.
No, I want someone who keeps fucking up just so you can go. Because I like.
But when then why would you take their advice?
Because it makes you feel like, oh, I'm fucking just human, isn't it? Like, everyone just fucks up. Like, I had this thing, right? When I first started to blow up online, I wasn't drinking, right?
Yeah.
And I said it a few times. I'm not drinking. And I felt quite... And then these people, like, kept thinking I was, like, really into sobriety because I started drinking again. And people started going, yeah, Jack's sober. I'm like, oh, pissed.
Well, somebody said that to me at the Fringe. I was like, oh, I'm going for a pint. They were like... Because I like take like months off
That's
drinking just
do.
To like sort myself out and just like get my head clear a bit. And they're like, oh, are you okay? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
I just take chunks of time off. And then when I fancy a pint again.
I'm so like that.
I'll have a pint.
Yeah. But I'm not like that. It sort of gets out of control to the point where I better stop that again.
Well, it's so easy in comedy just to drink and drink and drink and drink and drink. I had a thing where like when I was drinking, I would just wake up every morning with like a real sense of like dread.
Yeah.
But then I stopped drinking. And the dread still happened.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, let's get back on. You might as well, pipe.
Yeah.
If you're going to feel awful every day, I wake up every day like this.
yeah.
Every day.
Right.
I freak out. If I sleep on my back, I have a night terror. Guaranteed.
Fucking hell, mate.
I'm fucked up, man. Don't.
We all are, man.
But you, because you don't like people telling you to relax, but you were saying before the podcast, you have started hypnotherapy.
I've started hypnotherapy.
Is that not your nightmare?
I headbutted him.
he got his pocket watch and strangled him.
You're going under. Bang, you're going under.
That's all a headbutt is rapid hypnotherapy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Same
you're feeling very sleepy.
I think it is, I do find it's... It is helpful and it's nice.
So what's it for? Like, what's it for? Is it just a general hypnotherapy?
There was a few things. There was a few things at the beginning. That's why I've had a little break from the podcasting. So I went and got that stuff sorted. But as you talk more, I'll be open about it. Like we were chatting about today about like I've got a thing about like I don't like things being done for me. I don't like. For example, say like if you me and you were doing some joke writing,
yeah,
right, and I had a bit, and then you went do it like that. And you've done it for me. I'm like, that's not mine now, though, is it?
Yeah.
There's a little bit, maybe like a control element, because. And also, there's like that's why like I'm intense with the comedy, like I can't switch off.
And I get
a bit to help with that and just fucking chill out a bit, man. You know
yeah.
I mean? Like, I mean, how did you get on in Edinburgh? Did you ever come down after that?
Yeah, there was tricky stuff that happened to me in Edinburgh though. That was a real crashing come down where I found out. After I came back, that loads of comedians had been talking shit about me behind my back quite nastily. But so that was a come down.
Because you seem like a guy who wouldn't give a shit about it. You come across that way.
That's good that I come across that way, but it's not true at all. Like, that's nice that I do work very hard to like not stress about what other people think and like try and rise above that stuff. Because I was, like, bullied as a kid and all that stuff. And I've been in therapy since I was, like, 9 years old. But kind of come, like, it's hard when that, like, your whole, my whole anxiety is people talking about me behind my back.
Yeah.
And it's that, it's arrogant. It's arrogant to think that people are talking badly about you, because it's arrogant to think that anyone's fucking thinking about you.
Yeah.
But then
when they are,
it turns out to be fucking true.
You bang on, mate.
And you're like, man, I am not arrogant, but people do fucking hate me.
So it affected you bad, did it?
Yeah, well, it's just rough to have your worst fears confirmed.
So it's a surprise. That has surprised me, though, that you think like that, though.
I'm a very, very anxious. I was very, very anxious as a kid, still very, really bad, like you, really severe anxiety.
So you've had a lot of therapy and stuff?
I've had all the therapies.
All of them.
So my mum was like, I had basically like agoraphobia when I was a kid. So I couldn't leave the house. Total school refusal is what it's called. You just, like, I missed months of primary school. And my mum was like freaking
out. Primary school? What?
Yeah, I was like 9.
Fucking hell.
What was I stressed about?
Jesus.
Nothing. I don't know.
Yeah, I just, when I was 9, I just, like, my main focus was crisps. That's what I wanted, man.
That was your centering moment. It's just fucking crisps. Are you big into ASMR now with your fucking crisps?
Yeah, man.
But I just feel like I would freak out. And then I think because my mom freaked out, she put me into all these different therapies. Like, I've done like crystal therapy.
Yeah.
Where I, like, you lie down and they put like different crystals on all your fucking chakras and then they wave crystals.
You said, I think this above it.
I was like 10. What the fuck is going on?
Jesus.
I did like art therapy where they would give you a different like artistic like medium every week. So 1 week it would be like paint, 1week it would be like clay, 1week it would be like markers on paper. No. It's fucking bullshit.
It made it worse. People were talking about you. Doing fucking art
therapy. Art therapy? Was he gay?
You're making people talk about me.
Well, Vittoria's being bullied in school. What should we do? Get him painting. That'll solve it.
Yeah.
He'll be one of the cool kids now.
Why do you do wussy little girl therapy?
Yeah, oh my God. And then I hated hypnotherapy, which is why I'm interested by you. Like, I hated like, I watched Get Out for the first time recently. Have you seen Get Out?
I've not seen it.
That Jordan Peele film?
No, I know what it is, but I've not seen it.
And so it was like really like scary hypnotherapy and that. Like, you used to like fuck people over, basically. And I had to ask my girlfriend to be like, can we pause this? Because I'm freaking out. I hated that. I think similar to what you were saying, hated the lack of control.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as we had these like fucking tapes in a little like Walkman, and I would sit there to try and like sleep without having a night terror.
Is this an adult or as a child or both?
Like 11 years old, 10 probably. But I would just sit there, and as soon as it started to like work, almost, you know, the way they kind of like almost control your brain or like guide your brain in different directions. As soon as I wasn't in control of my thoughts or something, I would like freak out and like take the headphones off and like run away.
Yeah, because it's that's what we're supposed to be helping with.
Yeah, I know. It's so bad.
That's confusing.
But I don't really know what worked in the end. I mean, actual therapy.
Have you got that any good therapy stories?
Oh, I'm trying to think if I have any good. I mean, therapy's so boring. Although I would do bits. Have you had therapy?
Just
hypnotherapy? Yeah. But like proper therapy, so because you get to like do bits.
Got to make sure I make them.
Yeah. See, when you get your therapist laughing, that's the bit, because they're a tough crowd.
Yeah.
Because you like stuff that would normally be like a bit.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh yeah, and then everyone like laughed at me. Yeah. The therapist just goes, that sounds really hard. And you go, oh no, I thought that was fun. I was going to try that tomorrow.
I did this thing where after Edinburgh, my dad texted me and said, really proud of you, son. And I was like, fuck, I'm going to stop being funny now.
That's weird. We think that though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like if you fix your, like what's like damaged about you, you'll stop being funny.
It was really funny. I was messaging Mike Rice. Yeah. My dad, really supportive, but has no idea what I do. So he put a photo of me with Mickey Flanagan and said, the caption was, my dad, my son came third at Edinburgh. Just third. And then someone commented below.
That's so funny.
But someone commented below, what at? And he's put, stand-up comedy. no concept of...
But that's so good. Yeah. It's so good to have that clarity that people don't fucking... care. I was so stressed about Edinburgh beforehand. And then Marcus Birdman was like, oh, you stressed about Edinburgh? Go around to your neighbor's house, knock on their door and go, I'm really stressed about the Edinburgh Fringe. They'll go, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, what is it? Yeah,
it's not a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was your first Edinburgh?
Yeah, yeah.
How was it?
Yeah, right. It was a competition though, wasn't it? So it was,
oh, you were just up for a couple of days?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So no, it was first.
I mean, third.
Third.
That's pretty good.
It's all right, isn't it?
We both lost.
One Direction came third. Just saying.
And look at them now.
Exactly.
Like dressing like women and all.
Exactly.
That's your future. Yeah. Getting called out for queer baiting online.
But how did you find it?
I mean, I had a pretty fucking dreamy Edinburgh on the face of it.
So was the come down after or during that sort of?
Oh, constant panic attacks throughout the Fringe. This is always the thing. Like on the face of it, and I really feel bad for complaining because people had much. Like, I sold out every show, added extra shows, they sold out, and I got nominated for Best Newcomer.
Yeah.
I have no right to complain about anything.
Yeah.
But the truth of what, I had a lot of panic attacks. I found the whole thing very stressful. There was loads of fun times. Like, this is what I try to focus on in Edinburgh is I got to do a show every day, which I loved and was really proud of, to a full room. And I got to drink with the funniest people in the world.
Did it ever sort of not live up to your expectations? Do you ever get that feeling? Like when you go, this is just bollocks.
Nothing exists.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know that feeling of, this is...
Like you posted recently about getting whatever number of followers, 100K?
Yeah, yeah.
And doesn't...
Well, no, this is sort of why I had a little bit of a break from this, because I got 100,000 followers, done well in a competition.
Yeah.
And then I was just still just sitting in my front room, just like
nothing changes.
Being me, I was like, I had a bit of a meltdown, to be honest, because it was like,
all these things that you thought. Yeah. I was like, nominated for Best Newcomer, that'll be fucking class. And look, I'm getting opportunities off the back of it, but nothing. No. I got 10K followers. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And then you go, I'm still just.
It doesn't matter, does it?
I'm just hanging up washing.
This is where you've got to try it, and it's a bit like hack cliche thing, but just try and enjoy it, because I watched that thing on Netflix, that Jerry Seinfeld comedian, and there's that bit where he's chatting to Orny Adams, and
he's a freak, man.
Yeah, and he's going, what's he saying to him? Do you know what, all my friends have got mortgages, and they've all got and Jerry Seinfeld's looking at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, just enjoy it, man. Like, that made me go, oh, that.
It's important to reframe that, and like that's why it's good to be in touch with like. My mom always says to me, make sure you have friends who aren't performers.
Yeah.
Because they'll reframe it, because they're just going 9 to 5, putting numbers into spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would kill me.
Yeah.
We get to just, what's this?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Are we at work?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I needed that break to reframe. A friend of mine comes to see me at a gig somewhere, and there was he come with his wife, and he was, them two were half of the audience. There's four people there.
Yeah.
Right. And he come for a drink afterwards, and I said, oh, sorry about that. He was like, sorry about what? He has no concept of what, I don't know.
He's never been to live stand-up before.
He's just like, oh, I thought you, I really liked that. Good joke.
Fun.
Yeah, he was like, and I'm there going, oh, I'm sorry about that.
So embarrassed they saw me. Blah, blah, blah.
I don't give a fuck. It just, that was funny. Do you want a beer?
straight on.
Yeah, yeah.
Mate, I wish I had like that, I don't know, like that clarity that you get like from just, I don't want to be patronizing to people who have like normal jobs, because I think like artists are always very fucking patronized to people who have normal jobs, or they like romanticize it almost.
Yeah.
Where you just like, because we're like all the stability they have, we think is cool. We envy their stability, but they envy all the fun we have.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the toss up, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Like, but that's the thing. If you're making this fun thing hard, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, because it's fun.
Yeah, you're making people laugh, having a laugh, doing all this fun stuff. If you're making that shit, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, you're fucking up.
You're fucking this up, you idiot.
You're supposed to be having fun. That's why I freak out about like deadpan comedians, because I really like a lot of them, but it kind of freaks me out because I have so much fun when I'm on stage.
Yeah,
like I'm laughing and joking, and like I feel like I'm with the crowd and having a fun time.
Yeah,
but if I had to just do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you had to keep a straight face the whole way through all your sets, although I haven't seen your stand-up, to be fair.
Yeah.
Are you, I can't imagine you being deadpan.
No, I'm not really. I'm constantly changing it.
Like, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
People get stuck in little fucking...
And it all depends what mood I'm in.
Lanes. That's good as well. And it depends on the room.
Yeah.
People get stuck in this idea of like their brand or their fucking style. They're like, I'm quite low energy. Yeah. I'm like, sometimes don't be.
Because I was doing a competition. I was like high energy. And the analogy I can think of, do you know when you watch them... airplane films that it's crashing into a thing and they're trying to keep it level. Yeah. That's what it's like being high energy.
Yeah,
you're waiting for
it
just to dip off. You know what I mean? It's quite stressful.
You gotta just hammer it.
It's raining.
But you can do that over 5 minutes. You can really hammer for 5 minutes. I think you can do that up to like, you can hammer for 20, but see after that, it's like...
So I think I heard Bill Burr say a thing. I thought it was brilliant. It was like when you sit around with your mates in the pub, you say something funny and everyone laughs, but no one goes, you're very brave. Because you just say it, don't you? You just say something funny. But for some reason... Once you put a microphone in your hand, stand on the stage, that dynamic changes. You become detached from yourself.
Yeah.
You're not yourself, and becoming a good stand-up is trying to
get back to where you were, the funny person in the first place.
You could be sitting around with 10 people, be sitting around making everyone laugh, change the dynamic where you're facing one way and the crowd are facing you with a microphone. What's happened to me?
Yeah, you become like so self-aware and so like it's crippling to just be like, what's my left hand doing? do you ever not know what to do with this? You're holding the mic with this hand and you're just like, what do people do with this hand?
I put it on my hip like a little
teapot.
What am I doing? I never do that.
Oh, mate, somebody fucking ruined my life recently. We were like playing a game of like doing an impression of a comedian, but like just physically.
Yeah.
So like just what they kind of like stand like and look like. And my mate Robbie went, oh, I'll do you to me. And he stood up and just went like this.
Is that what you do? You hunch up.
Shoulders up and left arm... Like, it's magnetically not supposed to touch my hip.
Are you disappointed?
I was like, what? How the fuck has no one told me that I stand like a fucking freak? On, like I'm a fucking cardboard box?
But sometimes, because you know you're set, you'll be saying your words. And then you'll be thinking, where's my hand? And you're saying words, you're not thinking about what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're just thinking about what your hand is doing.
Man, Edinburgh's so bad for that when you're doing the same show every day for a month. Your brain is just like... taken over with like the randomest shit. But then like there's weird bits where like after a while, like you start taking a drink at the exact same place every day and you start like leaning on the mic at the exact same place every day. You walk here at the exact same place every day and it just becomes so...
Don't you get stuck in them patterns with the way your speech patterns as well. You emphasize certain words. The more... You feel sick every time you say it because you're like, that fucking way I say that.
Yeah.
I can't change it.
Yeah, it works. It fucking, when I do it, it gets a laugh, but I go, it doesn't get a laugh.
Yeah.
Stand up comedy is so fucking annoying for that. I had a bit that was like kind of heavy. It was talking a bit about therapy actually in the show. And I won't spoil it, but like, it's slightly like heavier subject matter, but it's still like a funny bit. But it was struggling to like work every time. Like some audiences go for it, some audiences wouldn't. And then a few, like a week into the Fringe, I started doing it in like a silly voice.
Yeah.
And it like crushed every time from that point onward. I was like, what a fucking stupid art form this is.
Yeah.
That all I had to do was just be like, oh, it's like this now. And I'm doing it with a silly fuck. And then people just don't get stressed. It's like, oh, he's joking because he's doing a voice.
Fuck's sake. Why are we doing this to her? Right, I better get some of these questions. What's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you?
So, coming back to the classical music-y stuff, there's a very embarrassing moment. Like I said, that Dvorak Symphony No. 9, one cymbal crash. So your whole job for that night is sit at the back of the orchestra, count whatever number of bars rest you have, stand up, pick up the cymbals, whack them together, put them back down, sit down.
Have a fag.
Literally go to the pub. It's bad. But the worst thing you can do as a percussionist, and it happened like a few times, it's so rough. Because people would think the worst, and I've done this loads, where you play in the wrong place and you come in at the wrong point and it sounds shit. And I've done that on a fucking gong. I've done that on cymbals. I've done it on a bass drum. It's so bad.
You got one job.
I ruined the world premiere of an opera once where there was a bit where like the whole like orchestra were like... And I forgot that there was a gap at the end on the way up and I hit the cymbal in the gap. So I went... And the conductor afterwards was like, that was so bad. because it's supposed to be a really dramatic moment. But when you put the symbol in the gap, it sounds like you're about to open a fucking clown car. But that's not the worst. Playing in the wrong place isn't the worst. The worst is when you're playing something like the Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, you've got one cymbal crash in the whole 45-minute piece.
Yeah.
You stand up, you pick up the cymbals, and you go, fuck, I missed it.
You're someone holding
cymbals. And
symbols.
You just have to pick the pants up. And you literally left the house for no reason. Like, you didn't need to be there. It's so bad. It's just like... And the whole audience, because like when you're watching an orchestra, you see a guy at the back stand up, pick up some cymbals. You're like, oh, shit, something's going to happen. And then he goes... It's so bad.
That's always bad, but you do say unnecessary. Like, I was at a train station a couple of weeks ago. My train was at the platform. Mm. I was like, oh shit, legged it for the train. Like, just got on and it weren't leaving for another 10 minutes.
Oh, so, I hate that.
So everyone just sees you run on, make this big thing. And then you
but
just
they
there.
Know as well. But there's nothing anyone, because they've been stood there for like 5 minutes. So they're like, it's delayed. And they've had an announcement. And you like jump on expecting like a round of applause. When you like, you're expecting like Indiana Jones and like grab your hat afterwards. But you just arrive like panting. And then nothing happens for ages. And you're just like, oh.
Especially when you bang. Like,
I always acknowledge people when they just make the train.
You're just giving me a little bit
when
of a,
they dive on
well done.
And the door's closed, I'm like, nice. Because that's what we want.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so weird in London. Like, do you ever catch yourself like sprinting for a tube because you see the doors are open and you like they're about to close? And then I sprint on and I go, I'm not in a rush.
Yeah, no, well, I was going to say, as you said that, I never sprint for a tube. Because every 2 minutes,
yeah,
you just feel like,
what are we doing? Yeah. What, like, where do you have to be where you can't be like, I'll be 2 minutes late?
Yeah,
exactly. Unless you're already late. But it's even when because I tend to give myself loads of time to get everywhere in London because I hate rushing for places.
Yeah.
So I'll get the bus rather than the tube and all this stuff. But you just see those open doors and the little kid in you goes, go on. Yeah. Fucking make that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just challenge yourself. Just to...
Do you ever just miss a bus and then race it to the next stop? I'll fucking take on a bus in a sprint. Oh, it's the best when they get caught at a traffic light and you fucking sprint past them. And then at the next stop, the bus driver's like,
yeah, well done. Yeah. Well done.
But sometimes it's despite them. Like, do you ever see, you like make eye contact with the bus driver and he closes the doors and like drives off?
Yeah.
My favorite thing, I used to cycle loads in London and I love supercars in London because I think they're so dumb.
Yeah, because you can't drive fast.
Like, why are you driving a Ferrari in London? It's so fucking silly. But I loved, like, a Ferrari overtook me once on my bike and then it's London, so it's way easier to get around on a bike. And I overtook the Ferrari.
I was like, I feel a bit stupid. You do that. I've done it. I've been the overtaker and he just come with the lights. And they're just behind. Like, do you know what I find? This is an awkward moment I drive, and I did this earlier. It's just so stupid, but it makes you feel awkward. Do you know when you get like a temporary traffic light in the middle of the road? So you're essentially, you're letting someone go.
Yeah, yeah, it's only one lane or whatever.
It's that muscle memory to say thanks.
But oh, because you can't go?
Yeah, but I've said thanks. And it just, I do that thing where I'll go, oh, it'll wind me up for a while.
Yeah.
And I have to come down from it a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I fuck. God, we're just idiots, aren't we?
Oh, my whole, if you see, I do this thing where you'll see me at, just out and about, and I'll just go like that because I'll just think of something.
But you just hate, happened. Like, I just hate myself.
That's so good.
Every time I do anything, I'm just like, why? Yeah. Why did you fucking do that? And there's a play I really like called Philadelphia, Here I Come, and there's the main character, two actors play him in the thing. So there's a public gars, the guy's name Public Gar, and Private Gar. Yeah. So the Public Gar is the one all the other actors and characters can see.
Oh, okay,
then Private Gar is basically his like internal monologue.
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. Like, Public Gar will say something and Private Gar will just be stood behind him going, why the fuck have you said that? That's not what you think. Yeah, why are you such a fucking idiot all the time? Yeah. But I think like apparently therapy helps with that.
You're right.
The narrative you tell yourself in your head. Do you ever just constantly be like, I'm a fucking anytime I forget stuff all the time. Every time I go anywhere and come back, my girlfriend's like, what'd you forget? I'm like, charger.
Yeah, that's the one where I can't see something when I'm looking for it. If someone says, look for that thing, I can't see that thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what happens to me. It's in there. I just lose. I can't see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
People can't give me directions. I tune out so quickly when someone's like, once they go like second left, and then if they say another thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, but young people go to that place. You know where it is, isn't you? You go, I'll look at it. And they start telling you where it is. I don't want you. I'm going to look it up. Don't start telling me now. Well, this is the one. When you're reversing out somewhere and someone just starts help, like ushering you back to help,
so
help you reverse. I don't need help, but now you're making me anxious because you're there. Like, fuck off. Like, no one's asked for your help. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think you'll be one of those old, do you stand up and let old people sit down in the tube?
Oh, but this is awkward though, isn't it? Because you think, how old are they?
This is the thing. Because you know, especially when it's women.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't want to be a dick. Yeah. And like make you feel insecure about how old you are.
Imagine that. So we go, you can sit down. She goes, I'm not that old. He goes, no, it's because you're fat. All right.
I have rules. If they have dyed hair of any sort,
right,
I'm not standing up.
Because they're hiding.
Because they want to look young.
Yeah.
If there weren't any kind of heel on their shoe.
Yeah.
You've decided you're capable of standing, or any animal print.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look young. Yeah, those are my rules.
I did it the other day. She accepted, but I was so anxious doing it. Because, you know, my head is thinking, everyone's seeing me not give up my seat for
this. They're thinking, I'm a dick.
Yeah, but then I'm going to be a dick now if I say.
So by the time you let her sit down, everyone hates you.
Yeah. That's fuck being in our heads. It's a bad place. Oh God! Let's get another question in. What's the most drunk you've ever been?
The most drunk I've ever been. I know the longest I've ever been drunk for, which was like I think I stayed drunk for 37 hours.
Fucking hell!
Not in terms of like I started drinking and then 37 hours later I stopped drinking. I probably started drinking like a couple hours and then got smashed.
Yeah.
And I was smashed for 37 hours.
No sleep.
No sleep, and a mad thing happens when you're drunk for that. I think I had maybe like an hour sleep in the middle, but I didn't sober up at any point. A mad thing happens where you learn to walk and talk again. So after being drunk for like 24 hours solidly, I think this is how people come like functioning alcoholics, because you'd never know they were drinking all the time. Because after 24 hours of being drunk, like you sort out your equilibrium, and you like remember how to talk again, even though you're still smashed.
So actually
the drunkest I've ever been is probably the most coherent I've ever been.
It's like when you wake up hungover and you start drinking again, it's like a different sort of drunk. You're in control. A bit more.
You're tuned back in because the hangover like dulls it so much. But it's so weird because I was just stood there watching the football match and my mate went, all right, how's it going? I was like, yeah, fucking great, man. He's like, what have you been up to? I was like, been drinking since Wednesday. and he was like, what? He was like, you don't seem drunk at all. I was like, mate, I'm fucking chinned right now.
I've lived it out.
Like, I am the most smashed anyone's ever been. It was fucking terrible. I hate throwing up, though.
See, I'm not bad for that.
You don't, like, as in you, when you throw up, you don't mind?
No, I'm never really sick.
You don't throw up?
Yeah.
I'm rarely sick with alcohol, but fuck me, I hate it when I am.
Oh, yeah.
I scream when I throw up because I hate it so much.
Yeah.
So I'll just literally, I'll go like, bah!
But sometimes though, when you ask, but I've been, when you're sick, I feel better now. I feel better. It's that really, I needed that. And then you're back in the room.
You know, but I just cry when I throw up. I'm like, it's such a little girl. I'm like,
cuddling in the toilet.
There was one time, there's a thing in Belfast called the 12 Pubs of Christmas. Which is great, and I don't know why everyone doesn't do it. So you go out on a night out, it's like in the lead up to Christmas, and you go to 12 pubs. It's just a pub crawl, but you have like a pint in every pub, and it's like Christmas everywhere, it's Christmas jumpers. It's fucking lovely, but you never make it to the fucking club.
No.
That's so many pubs.
Yeah. It sounds doable, but it's...
It's not. At pub 9, I always switch to like rum and coke.
Yeah.
Because it's just the amount of liquid.
See, this is my problem. I love beer. I just like, I can't really switch.
You love a beer. You're such a beer guy.
It's just because it's
you're so down to earth, Jack.
Oh, that's my vibe.
How do you do it?
That's my brand.
I feel inaccessible to the common man.
I'll teach you. Get some wigs, bruv. That's how you get in there. Be an idiot with wigs. Oh, do you remember when you produced this with my brother? Did Mike tell you at the end, the whole time he thought your name was Victoria? Yeah, do you hear him at the end of the podcast go, thanks, Mike. Mike, thanks, Victoria.
Yeah, but
that,
that
mind reading go, he just saw a man called Victoria and then go, I'm going to question that.
No,
I'm going to go with that.
Your brother's not a questioner. He's just a very trusting fella. And I really respect that about him, actually. What was I saying? Yeah, 12 pubs at Christmas. I was, but I'm at home in Belfast, so I'm going back to my parents' house and I am like steaming. Oh, I got spiked once.
Oh.
Yeah, I forgot this. Have you ever like mindswept in pubs? You know, minesweeping in pubs?
No.
So you just like unattended drinks, you just steal them and drink them.
Oh, you do.
Yeah.
Oh,
so right, you just like, if you see a drink that someone's like left to go to the toilet or whatever, you just.
Is that a student thing?
Drink it. Yeah, I was really broke in London and stuff, and you just like nick them.
Yeah.
And I was out once and I stole this like rum and coke. And I was like, yes, nailed it. This is like my drink.
Yeah.
Anyway. Drank it and like it had been spiked.
Fuck.
Like, obviously, they didn't mean to spike me.
Yeah.
I'd intercepted a spiking by accident.
It was like they meant for a beautiful young woman. Like, well, he's had it. So. When in Rome.
But luckily, I was with my mates and they were like, they got me to.
What did it feel like?
I was in McDonald's in the queue for like the little like screen thing.
Yeah.
And, I thought I was doing stand-up. So I was like doing bits to all the seated people in McDonald's.
So what were you spiked with though? Was it not made you pass out? It just made you go weird?
Yeah, you just black out and have no fucking clue what's happening. And all my mates were like, you're definitely spiked. Because people were telling me to shut the fuck up in McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I thought that they were like hecklers. So I started like putting them down. Being like, those shoes were those fucking
Fucking hell, man.
I nearly got fucking beaten up like so fucking close.
Imagine what your powers went with you though, man.
Jeez. Yeah, I would be dead and sexually abused probably.
Yeah.
But then I ended up back at the house throwing up in the toilet in my house. And then my mum heard me throwing up, or like my brother was in the living room. I was like, get mom, because I thought I was gonna die. And mom went to like run down the stairs and she like slipped and like fell down the stairs. So she's falling down the stairs, I'm throwing up on the toilet, so dad comes to help mom, and then mom's just like in a heap at the bottom of the stairs. My dad's like, what the fuck do I do? And then she's like, get Victoria like a cold cloth for his head and stuff, and he runs into the kitchen, and my dad's so fucking weird, he starts emptying the dishwasher. And mom's like, what are you doing? He's like, I need a dunk.
Ignore your
At
son.
3 a.m. he was just like, my dad's like that. He's just like, it needed done, so I just fucking did it, right? So it was chaos, but my mum's fine. And I'm fine as well.
Oh, there you go.
And it was okay. And my brother just sat watching TV the whole time.
You remain unraped.
Just as far as I know.
Yeah.
I did black out. It's the only time I've ever blacked out, which is why I think I know I was spiked, because I've been very drunk but not blacked out before. Yeah. But don't mind sweep, kids. Unless you're broke and it's fun.
Yeah, that's dangerous, isn't it?
But I've mind swept a lot of times and I've only been spiked once.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
And if anything, I protected a woman from a terrible evening.
There you go.
Feminism.
Yeah, exactly. You got in the way of that bullet. You took the bullet for her.
Listen, I'm a hero.
Yeah, yeah. Give me that dick. Oh, man.
Fuck, so stupid.
Fucking hell. All right, are we...
About 10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes?
We've got 10 minutes?
Brilliant.
What should we talk about now?
What should we talk about?
The cost of living crisis?
Cost of living crisis. You can do that. It's boring, isn't it?
Yep. I was fully joking, but you're so nice. You're such a nice guy, Jack. I was like, as a joke, he's going to laugh when I say this. I was like, talk about the cost of living crisis. You were like, you're such a good podcast host that you were like.
Done for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm such a word. No, that's the thing with the cost of living, though, isn't it? Like, oh, yeah, you're going to be skint. And what's the difference?
I've always
lived like this. There's no fucking difference to me.
More skint.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always think that with economic stuff, people go like, oh, there's like the economy is in the toilet. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
They're like the fucking the FTSE 100 is down. I'm like, well, what do any of these things mean?
What was I watching last? Oh, The One Show. Because they said, they had something, some singer on or something. And they said, yeah, because now we need cheering up more than ever. Now, like, there has been such. What about the plague?
Yeah. Do you remember when everyone died?
No, we need cheering up more than ever.
I bet they meant the fucking Queen.
Yeah, but there was just everything.
Just absolutely everything.
But yeah, man.
I got in a lot of trouble for all my Queen stuff.
Yeah, you went in hard though.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, the weird thing is, you get in trouble for saying things that you might, when you're doing it, you must know, oh, people aren't going to like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I can get done for doing like the most silliest thing, right?
Yeah.
One thing I wouldn't call myself, edgy, right?
No, I wouldn't. Yeah.
And then people will
but
still.
But you look edgy.
But they'll find a way to, like, any sketch.
People want to get angry at
it. They'll find a way to
and argue. That's the problem, because you've got such a big platform.
Yeah.
So many people are seeing it. So percentage wise, probably like. There's always like 1% of people are mad, like they're fucking insane and are always looking for something.
Yeah,
to like
but
go
yeah,
after.
I didn't realize how. Like,
do you think it's the tattoos?
No, just people. I think it's just people just like to get angry. Like I did a sketch, and the sketch was.
Well, you did say at the start of this, you were like, "Moaning is so good, isn't it?"
Yeah, but no, but yeah, I did say that.
They're just moaning. Yeah, but not at me. Actually,
but it makes logical sense. So.
Yeah, to you, yeah, but yeah. It makes logical
but
sense
that,
to them.
To me, this makes no. Like, I did a sketch of that if I was David Beckham.
Okay,
and the sketch
the cue thing.
Yeah, and I'd say, oh yeah, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah,
and you find it's 14 hours. You go, oh well, I am David Beckham, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that was the joke, right?
Yeah,
it's the joke, right? If you want to dissect it, it's about me being
I'm a selfish guy. I'm a more selfish guy than David Beckham.
Yeah.
Seems to be.
And people are just like, this is this. Disrespectful. Well, to who?
Yeah,
right?
No one. But it's just people confuse the topic, the broad topic of a joke. Versus like the victim of the joke.
And it's, yeah, because that word, triggering words, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if they're sensitive to that, they're just going to go,
Yeah.
That's not what the joke. I did one about the Ukraine. It was about the bloke at the after party giving his opinions on Ukraine. And the joke was, is that idiot who doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, he hasn't a fucking clue. Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the joke.
Yeah.
It's just a
he's
representative.
He's the idiot in the joke. What, yeah.
They go, oh, you should be taking a piss out of Ukraine.
I'm not taking a piss out of this imaginary guy that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
it's so fucking dumb. I had a bit in my show where I talked about Ukraine. And someone told me they were at, a mate of mine was at the show, and there was a couple arguing on the way out of the room at the Fringe, and the husband was going like, it's fucking disgraceful, he was making jokes about Ukraine, this is a problem with young people these days, they just don't fucking understand what anything's about. And his wife punched him in the arm and went, you fell asleep, so you don't know why he was talking about Ukraine. It actually made perfect sense. Those people, they just literally, they go like, you can't make jokes about that.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it's not, you're not listening.
Yeah,
but people just want those words. Question: and they just freak out.
Have you ever been offended by a joke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you just, yeah. There was like I was listening to a podcast and they were making jokes about like the famine in Ireland, and I was like, I wasn't necessarily offended. I was like, that's just fucking stupid. Actually, last night I was on a gig and an English comedian did his whole set in an Irish accent. I was making jokes about like I've got 17 uncles. I'm drunk. I'm this bad.
We're just taking a piss out of Irish. That's that was the thing.
And then I went on after him. I was like. You know, he wasn't Irish.
Oh, he didn't reveal that he wasn't Irish.
He said, I'm going to do this English character that I do now. And then he went and did his normal voice for a bit and then went back. And then, like, it all got very blurry and the audience didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
And then it didn't make any sense. It wasn't very good. But then there was another Irish act immediately after him and then an act and then me. So there's two Irish acts after him doing it. It was so annoying because I went on and went, I always go like, what's the crack? How's it going?
Yeah.
And the audience like didn't believe me.
Oh, fucking hell.
Because he'd lost their trust in the night.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they'd gone, well, everybody's just putting on weird fucking...
I feel sorry for the audience.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Just be like, what's going on? Have you been offended by a joke?
I've felt uncomfortable about things.
Like, yeah?
When people do things like about... say jokes about like, things like cot death or things like that. Or like,
who the fuck is doing a cot death?
Have you not seen cot death jokes?
That was so unexpected.
That's fucking so deep, though, isn't it?
There was like a Rolodex.
There's
and
a
stuff.
Night called there's a night called Cot Death at the Cabin. It's just mainly cot death.
It's a niche.
just anything I've seen, like I say, I've made light of cot death now. But yeah, when someone's talking about something.
And there was just the Rolodex and stuff I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, maybe Jack's going to be annoyed when people like make fun of like working class people or whatever. And you were like, cot death. I was like, what?
Because it is offensive, okay? Because what I find offensive is someone going, oh, don't put that in my head. That's what I find offensive. I'm like, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to have a laugh.
You know what I mean?
But then if they can make you laugh in that difficult place.
Yeah, well, I just managed.
Oh my God. It was just so unexpected. I don't know what I thought. Oh my God. That's so fucking funny. But just imagine, what's the deal with Carter?
Yeah. But also, there's this thing, isn't it? Got a comedian. People just love paedophiles. They love. That's gonna be the clip.
Welcome back to the podcast. That people just love paedophiles. Vittorio, your thoughts?
Yeah.
They do seem to love them. They've got crowns and all these days. It's fucking good shit
nowadays. But people do this thing where they're like on my sketches and all that. They want to get in the nearest paedophile joke. They want.
Oh yeah. It's
like,
so easy.
This silly sketch of me. It was the sketch.
Fucking a kid.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Silly sketch. It got taken down against guidelines.
Fucking TikTok, am I right? Chinese censorship can't damn.
Can't shake anyone nowadays. No, it was like the joke was like it was about me being dumped on a bouncy castle. So the joke is.
Oh, I love that sketch. Yeah, it's so fucking funny.
Right. And then someone just commented, "Well, if you're being dumped on a bouncy castle, you must be talking to an 8-year-old."
He's on the phone.
Yeah, just like, but it's like, oh, bloody hell! Why have you gone there with it?
Maybe they were touched as a kid, and maybe they've had a hard time with that stuff, and that's on their mind. And listen, everybody struggles with different things, Jack, and you gotta just accept that your audience are a bunch of fucking idiots. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
well, at least yours pretend to laugh. And just say, "Oh, I get that. I understand that." Give themselves a pat on the back.
Because I'm always interested by this. Like, you've obviously like been confronted with who likes your stuff, if that makes sense. Like, because we don't decide what our demographic is. We make the stuff we want to make, and then the people who like it.
Yeah.
Have you like noticed any like trends? Because I've noticed like a lot of autistic people like my which is like a mad thing to say, but it's just true. I'm not saying all autistic people like my stuff, but like a lot of the people who like my stuff are autistic. Yeah.
Like deaf, blind people, they quite like it.
People who've had lobotomies.
Generally, if anyone comes to see me, they're like sort of just working class young couples. Generally,
yeah.
And I quite like that.
That's nice.
And that's what I'm going for, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's your frame of reference, I guess.
Well, I went and saw Mickey Flanagan at the Leicester Square Theatre doing his preview or whatever.
Class.
Right.
What a room to see him in.
But then what I did, I looked around and the whole audience would just look like Mickey Flanagan's mates.
Yeah.
Middle class couples from Essex, East London.
Yeah.
And that's what made me think, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You hone in, you get your crowd, and then you play to them.
Yeah. So I don't think it's... I don't want to, like, ever consciously pander.
No, but it's just...
Like, think, what do they want me to do?
The more you are yourself, the more it will naturally...
The more it will naturally just, like... Same as actually finding your mates.
Yeah.
Don't, like, try and impress people. Like, just be yourself.
Well, that's... I think the biggest thing... I was trying to do with this podcast and all that. There's that thing for authenticity. But as I was saying to you before about, like, having your... idols or whatever
you want to hear
people fuck up because polished Instagram fucking millionaires tell you how to live your life. Fuck that, man.
Well, that's the fucking fringe thing. Everyone looks at my social media, and that's what social media, it's self-promotion. It's aren't I great, come see my show, buy my stuff, do this, whatever. But I think people appreciate you going, I get lots of stuff wrong.
Yeah, man. A lot of people listen to this podcast, hear about how you've tried every bit of therapy, and it hasn't worked.
None of it. I'm incurable.
There you go.
I'm a psychological medical marvel, actually.
That confident finalist in Edinburgh is a complete fuck-up.
I haven't a fucking clue what I'm doing.
And I'm a fuck-up, too.
We fucking did it, guys!
Yeah, boy. Great place to end the podcast. Thank you, Vittorio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.